Finding the right musical collaborator takes a special type of chemistry. It's not unlike finding a romantic partner. And in the case of our guest today, their partner in marriage and music are one and the same. This is Kingston Live, and today we're joined by one of the city's great musical power couples. Chris Abbott and Dee McNeil have been marrying philosophy and punk energy with folk music since well before their debut record in 2011. They've been collaborating for as long as they've known each other, but their musical journeys go back long before they joined forces. Chris has been a staple of the Canadian musical landscape since the late 80s as the guitarist of The Pursuit of Happiness. Dee cut her teeth in the punk scene as a guitar player for the Strap-Ons. And since they started publishing music as Chris and Dee, the pair have earned main stage performances across Canada and listeners from around the world. Today they join Riley Jabor and Ange Stever in her Kingston Live debut to talk about their career and life together and their plans for the future.
There's always stuff happening. It's amazing.
I feel lucky to be here because Kingston has so many venues like that.
I think Kingston has a great music scene that is better than 90% of other towns of this size.
And once I got in, I was like, great, I'm here. I'm just going to start a band now.
Welcome to Kingston Live. Let's introduce ourselves.
Can I start? It's Angela Stever here, and I'm so excited. This is my first Kingston Live podcast, as you heard in the intro. And we've got two wonderful women with us today who I met a long time ago, and I'd love to talk about how you guys met.
Okay, so... Starting
no, you got to introduce yourself.
Oh, okay.
Say your name.
Well, yes, okay. There's no visual here. I'm Chris. The Chris part of Chris and Dee.
I'm Dee McNeil. I'm the Dee part of Chris and Dee.
Okay, so you're in a band together right now, but you met together in a band way back in the day, as far as the story I remember.
Yep, we were in an all-girl band called the Strap-Ons, a bit of a gender bending band of the times. So we had a trans drummer and... the rest of the girls in the band were, you know, gay or identified as gay. So, we had this band. It was very organic. It started from, you know, just a bunch of girls sitting around trying to play guitar. We all played guitar at first. And then we got our first gig at a gay bar and we couldn't fit on the stage because there was too many guitars. So we had to diversify. And I ended up playing the drums so I could sit down and get out of the way. And, you know, we diversified over time and just sort of grew. We wrote our own songs about people in the community, massacred some covers, and sort of punched above our weight for a long time. Got some really great gigs because, you know, we had this... energy and this great merch. You can imagine what a band called the Strap-Ons, what kind of merch we had.
What did you sell? Just t-shirts or did it go beyond that?
We had our
mostly underwear.
Okay. Was a big seller.
Yes.
And then we met Chris. You know, we started playing out of town and in the States and festivals and shows, and we met Chris, who was a legit musician, and I think she'd say she was captivated by our sense of fun and not taking ourselves too seriously and just loving music, loving performing, loving the whole thing of playing live, and she joined us, and the rest was history. Do you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, I guess I mean sort of like, you know, at that time I spent decades playing in a rock band called The Pursuit of Happiness. And you know, the thing about being in a really popular band is when it's popular, it's really, really fun. And then when it's not so fun. And the band always was fun. It was fun from the day one till even today when we're still doing shows. So I feel really grateful for that. But the business part of it was really disappointing, you know, like just really hard to make a living, hard to make a consistent living and stuff. I'm also grateful for the fact that I did, but... it was hard. And so I just kind of thought, I'm done with it. I need to do something else, and I don't know how to do anything else unless I just really apply myself and step out of it altogether. So at the point when I met Dee, I had closed my guitar and I was done. I wasn't going to play music anymore. And then I saw them having fun instead of, you know, struggling with the music industry. And they just had fun. They just didn't care. They were really, truly having fun. And they were also really popular because of it, I guess. So I said I would play a few shows, and then a few shows added on and stuff. And then...
And then you bought the underwear.
She bought into the underwear.
Yeah.
Well, at the actual first gig, and Chris's good friend Patricia Wilson from famous, iconic bartender at Buddies in Bad Times in Toronto and musician in the scene, had dragged Chris out to our gig and sort of at break sort of pulled her over to me and said, excuse me, I know you think you're really good, but you need to meet my friend. She's an amazing guitarist. And I said, oh yeah, that's nice. And Chris is, you know, she's a small person, and I just couldn't imagine this kind, sort of soft-spoken person could be this amazing musician. And so her friend Patricia said, she's in a band called The Pursuit of Happiness. And I remember my first thought was, oh my God, why did you pick that name? There's already a band with that name. And she, and so Patricia said, no, The Pursuit of Happiness, the same band. And I remember seeing her, and then I was like, oh my God, it's you. I can't believe you're the same person off stage as you are on.
I feel so lucky that I got to see you perform with The Pursuit of Happiness at the Kingston Penn Show for the United Way a few years ago, because for years, Dee would tell me, oh, Ange, one day you're going to see her perform, and it's totally different than Chris and Dee. Just you wait. And it is. You go in this, like, zone. You're a rock star. No, let me correct that. You're a rock star.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, mostly I'm shy.
Very humble.
It happens. I have no idea why it happens. It just happens.
One of the best things about the strap-ons, though, honestly, why we were such an alluring package is, so we were based out of London, Ontario, and we had a friend of ours who was sort of the general manager at this hockey rink. And it was a hockey rink, curling rink attached to an abandoned hotel. And it was back in the day where they would build these tournament rinks where, you know, people would come and do their bond spiels and stay over. So it was part hotel, part like hockey / curling, etc. And so we got free rehearsal space for a number of years from this abandoned hotel. So we had this deluxe hotel room with adjoining rooms. The one room was the sort of the meeting room, the couch, the coffee maker, the fridge, the bar, the comfy furniture, the fake plants, the posters on the wall, and the other room was our rehearsal space. So we rehearsed there for years. It was sort of this built-in perpetual gig where people would drop in all the time. So the people that worked at the rink or at the restaurant downstairs on break would come up, and, you know, they would be up there. They would be drinking a beer or smoking some dope and just watching us rehearse. And I think it was a really good, like, performance sort of. It really helped us grow. We were constantly being watched in our rehearsal space. Yeah, we were always grandstanding to the max because somebody new was coming up the stairs to, like, watch us.
That's such a unique way for your band to grow, because you're right. There is always such a difference between a band that, like, they're great in a jam space, and then they get on stage in front of people, and there's that moment of, oh, what do I do now? There's people looking at me.
Yeah, we always rehearsed in front of an audience. Exactly. It was kind of weird.
and those people were not afraid to zone out when it sucked or tell you they liked that part. Like, it was very interactive, you know, like, yeah, that was good. No, do not play that song. That's terrible.
What's that been like for you guys for the last few years, not playing in front of audiences?
Well, you know, I think what works for us is that, you know, we're really organic. We only perform when we feel that it's going to be like a mutually nice experience for the audience and for us. And we only write when we feel like we have something to say. So, I mean, our process is just kind of unique to us. So it certainly just didn't feel like anything was naturally happening over the last couple of years. It didn't feel like it was in a good inviting space. So we weren't complaining about the fact we couldn't have that space. It just didn't feel like the right climate for it. So we've just been kind of listening to a ton of music and like a lot of different stuff, like just stuff that we would never imagine that we're ever listening to. We're listening to music. And then both of us have been just really busy doing other things. And then
what kind of stuff are you listening to? Now I feel like I need to know.
Well, I've really gone into electronic music. I love it. Listening to a lot of atmospheric stuff and beats and things like that. Really enjoy that. That's kind of my go-to every single morning, and jazz. And it's just kind of like I'm into like what sounds really good is kind of enjoyment to me. But it's okay to be something different and not to feel like because you can't show up that day and be the performer or the writer that you want to be, that you're not. I mean, it's important, of course. You have to do it all the time. You have to be committed. But for us, again, is kind of our own way of working together, because we don't work as one person, we have to work as two people, and it's got to be collaborative and good for the two of us, is that when we have something that inspires us or a conversation that we need to kind of make together in music, it just happens. And if it only happens once every few years, great. But we never, ever, ever worry about it not happening. We just know it will. So that's kind of what's been happening for us. We've just been living life and trying not to complain about it, because if you complain about it, you're kind of missing out on a lot of stuff too, right? So that's kind of where we're at.
I want to dig back there to a comment you made about listening to stuff you wouldn't expect to, because I'm always fascinated by the relationships between genres, both by artists kind of fluidly moving between genres and what influences an artist that you wouldn't necessarily sonically hear that same influence in. And I'm always fascinated. I always come back to the relationship between people with a history in punk rock bands and people who transition into folk. What is it that you think that kind of connects those two genres in such a intrinsic way that it's almost hard to put your finger on, but there's something there?
Oh, there's definitely something.
I always say that folk is lazy punk. Like, when you literally can't play your guitar or the drums, that you're just like, okay, we're going to like take this down to like a 110 from a 220. But it's got the same sentiment. It's just, yeah, it's not so fast and in your face, but it's, yeah, you're right. That's actually a really great parallel that you're drawing there, Riley. That's very astute.
Thank you.
Agree with you there.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's different ways to get the point across, and sometimes the soft-spoken way can be actually a lot harder a message than screaming it in someone's face. Screaming, like, it's fun. It's super fun. We've both played that kind of music, and Pursuit of Happiness's background is definitely like a punk pop background, so there is nothing more fun than jumping around, screaming and playing and stuff. But to be really reserved and say something that's really hard to say, it's tricky.
And I think folk gives you the juxtaposition, the space for juxtaposition when everything's ramped up. When the lyrics are ramped up and very literal in punk, say, and the tempo's up, there is no juxtaposition. It's like in the folk genre, there's the space to have the biting lyrics, but the sweet melody that'll carry it. And I think the juxtaposition is what's Chris always goes for, and I think it's very effective.
It's almost like the punk rock is getting in a screaming match with your parents when you're a kid, and folk is when your parents say, "I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed." There's less right. said there, but it cuts a little bit more. It twists the knife.
Yes, exactly. Very good.
When I would think back to your 2013 album, Bloom, I feel like that we had started to form a bit of a friendship maybe just before that. And I went out to the Bathhouse studio when you were recording that. You played a song for me. I remember I was like in tears, and then listening to other ones, I was like, oh, that song Bones. I still remember the last song on the album. It just takes me to church. Like, I grew up in the church, and you know, when you hear a hymn and it like, oh, right in the soul, you're like, hallelujah. Bones like definitely takes me there. And I was looking, it's like you guys have an album every 2 years kind of thing between 2011 and 2019. That was your most recent one, Browse Line. Let's play a tune from that. No Tattoo. Let's discuss where that one came from. What inspired it?
Well, I think the concept behind No Tattoo was, I think everybody goes through this. Am I going to get a tattoo or am I not? And, you know, you always think like, well, I want, if you're going to get your body inked, you want to have something that that will resonate with you forever, or you'll stand for forever. And it's like, for me personally, and both of us, we're not inked. So it's like, we've never found that thing. But then, you know, we started thinking, but it's like, but we could commit to each other, but like, we can't commit to a tattoo. I don't know. It went a lot of crazy directions, but that's sort of the only thing that's permanent is you is the tagline in the song. And that's sort of where that came from.
Too much pop, hard to wrangle in my fleeting thoughts. If I could reduce them in a pot on the stove, then I would get what I already don't even have a tattoo. One thing that I can stand behind forever, never change my mind. The only thing that's permanent is you. Check up, too much wine, drunken thoughts strung across my mind. If I can reduce them in a pot on the stove, then I would get what I already. Don't even have a tattoo. One thing that I can stand behind forever, never change my mind. The only thing that's permanent is you. I won't force it. I won't try too hard. It's hard to find a piece don't even have a tattoo.
Thank you for listening to Kingston Live. Be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. For more great Kingston music, check out the Kingston Live playlist on Spotify. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. You can also hear our sister show, Kingston Live On Air, on Amherst Island Radio and CFRC.
Let's talk about the relationship of being bandmates, musicians together, and also obviously being in love together. Is that a difficult angle? Does that create more difficulty or more songwriting potential? What's that do? That was a very ineloquent way to just...
What does that do?
I very much just said a bunch of words. I don't know if there was a question in there.
Well, I think that songwriting partnership probably has a similar dynamic. There's sort of two different components. Like when you're a songwriting team, you have different roles and you know how to stay out of the way while one person's process is happening. And so there's that where, you know, a lot of times I listen to Dee writing the song, like she won't write for a while. And then when she starts to write, she just writes and writes and writes. And I hear her singing all over the house, and I can hear sometimes her in the basement, and I hear her singing, and I'm like thinking to myself, if she just changed that one, you know, like I'm just like,
judging her, okay,
24/7,
and then I wait for the right moment to say something, and then she's like, stop producing me, I'm still writing, you know, and so there's like a little bit of a give and take kind of thing like that. So that's one thing that happens, but I think that kind of happens in any sort of songwriting partnership, that you know you have to kind of give and take, and unless you're a different kind of songwriter. And then there's like on the relationship side of it, you know, we never fight. We don't fight very much. I mean,
we're just good teammates. You know, we fell in love and we just got each other. We're both from the Ottawa Valley. When it comes to music, we just get each other, like Chris is saying, like, you know when to let the other person lead and you sit back, and then you just have faith, oh, that person knows how to do that and you do this, and it's just a sense of what you bring to the table in everything. And it's just, I don't know, we just get each other, and I would say we have a good partnership in yeah, all of our endeavors.
Yeah, and then when it comes to, you know, the actual logistics of, like, doing shows and stuff like that, it's so much easier. Because you can drive in the
always
same car.
Always available at the same time. Like,
how's your schedule? Well, actually, no, the schedule thing is a little bit more complicated, but it's kind of like, do you want to go away? Or do you not want to go away? Or
it's hard not to show up at practice.
Yeah, you know, like we often, when we did our tour to the Maritimes, we were like, okay, let's make sure that we take a few extra days to actually enjoy Nova Scotia instead
yes,
of just driving there to do a show and then turning around. We, you know, so there's a lot of time where we can slip in and out of being in a band. And then when we play with our actual band, which, my gosh, the last time we played with them was a really, really special show, and we had no idea it would be the only show we played on that album and the only show we would play with those people in a couple of years, you know. But they're just the most amazing people. Van Sheen, Duncan Holt, Sticky Henderson.
Ken Hall.
Just great, just like wonderful people. And they just brought our music to such life, and it was really special. So, yeah, I'm not sure where I went there. I just kind of went to the little mini band, and then when we get to express it with a larger band. But
It's kind of hard. You put out an album and you're just about to like push it and go, and then COVID's like,
meow. Yeah, well, I mean, we put it out and it was in October, I guess it was October. And then we thought, okay, Christmas comes around and people are busy and we don't want to, you know, we don't want to intrude on people's space and stuff, like asking them to come to a show and stuff. And then it was like, well, next thing you know, it was too late to ask. But we'll get back to it.
COVID must have packed kind of a double whammy, because this entire pandemic, we've been hearing about how hard it is for musicians and obviously how difficult it is to be able to play shows and be able to perform. But also, Dee, with your line of work with working with KHSC, you're also under a tremendous amount of different stresses and duties there. And with kind of both of your worlds having that sudden shift, that must have had a big impact.
It definitely did. It just took the focus right out of music. And honestly, I don't think we're sitting here missing it. Like, I don't think we'll look forward for it to come back for our musician friends and our performing friends and our performing comedians and our performing everyone's and for us as well. But we're definitely not sitting around missing it. It's just a different time and a place. And we tried to do a couple of these Zoom concert things, and it just was not for us. We had a great time. We met some great people, but it was a day of Zoom, an evening of Zoom, and we just sort of decided we just weren't going to go that route. And, you know, like, we just don't feel like we need to be talking all the time either. Like, we can take a pause while the pandemic takes hold and, you know, live life, you know, process all this stuff, and then hopefully come back with some stuff that's worthy of sharing. And
yeah, where do you think the music will go after this? That's interesting.
Yeah, we have no idea. We're just open-minded. I mean, we have a thing that, you know, will always show up. There's a certain thing that's us that will always show up, but I hope that something new. I mean, we always think, damn, if we could have done the last record. Like, so far, all of our records have been a really completely different songwriting process. They've been a completely different recording process. You think you're going to do one way that you're going to get, oh, next time it's going to be even better because I'll know how to do it the next time. It's like, oh, no, something new and inspiring comes up and you try that out. So, yeah, something new will happen for sure.
Well, I mean, good question. Where's it going? So what came after the war? Like, when the war broke, what kind of music came out? Because I feel like it might go that direction.
I think it's going to be happy. I think it's going to be uppity, joyful. I think people are going to expect the opposite, but I don't think that's what we're going to get.
I agree.
Yeah.
In general, but for us, I really honestly don't have a clue. I love that about music. I love that I actually don't know until it starts to happen what is going to actually present itself. That is absolutely fascinating to me.
What inspires you to write a song? Is it a feeling? Is it, oh, I'm going to tell a story? Are you like...
All of it. Sometimes, yeah, all of it. Sometimes it comes out of concept, because Dee often likes to think conceptually, and then she researches concepts, and then that concept ends up sort of coming out in lyrically a direction that we write in. And then sometimes it's a sound, sound that's just really inspiring, and it's just like, oh, that sound is neat.
It's like
question marks,
lyrical
question marks.
It's like I'm picturing the DNA double helix. It's like there's a Chris brings the music, and I've got the lyrics, and they just like coil up and like knit a song.
I wish this was a video podcast, because I love the enthusiasm your hand started going with that time.
You're in Kingston a lot, and you have a song that talks about that, the day of the the last show that the Tragically Hip put on. And it's quite a powerful song and just like kind of, you know, encompasses your experience and the feelings that you had on that day. As musicians in Kingston, and for those who haven't, you know, taken your song in and taken it in that way, what was that like for you?
That day was, well, it was crazy. It was a, it's kind of weird to describe it. So Chris goes way back with that band. So she came at it from more of a personal connection. I know the guys a little bit later in life, as I'm sure you all do. So there was that personal connection. And then there's the whole country looking in to little old Kingston that's exploding. And it's sort of this organic grassroots, like you're trying to sneak a beer on the bus to go down to Market Square. And then, you know, you're seeing Ange Stever and Bill Walichka, and like you're seeing everybody that you know downtown. And it's so happy. It's like, you know what's happening. You know where this is going. You know you're about to see the best show you've ever seen. You're worried for the guys because you know it's fragile. So it was a party. It was a ramped up emotion. You knew what you were getting, but you didn't know what you were getting. And then we're in the bowl and we're looking up. There's Justin Trudeau. Here comes a Canadian flag. Here's a bunch of beach balls. Here's five guys playing like their heart out, playing an amazing show. The show ends. They're kissing each other. It's like, holy shit. Like, what is this day? Like, but I think what we felt at the end, even though it, like, you know where it's going, you know where it's going for Gord. It just felt so friggin' fun. It felt like just a joyous celebration. And I don't know.
Yeah. And the sort of in the song, there's a metaphor of what was happening to us, you know, that summer with the drought, and it was terrible. The farmers were struggling, like everybody was struggling, like everything. It's just like everything was, that what was happening with that band and with the city and what was going down was a metaphor about everything going on. And then at the end of the night, when we all walked out after like having the after show drinks and all that stuff, and it was like started to rain, and then it rained that night. Like that was just like
it's like the drought broke.
Hard not to cry about it. Actually, it was just incredible.
I have tears in my eyes. You're just talking about it.
Riley, take the
next question.
Well, like, what about you guys? What were you guys all doing?
You know, I was broadcasting that day downstairs at the Turnanog, and so I was working. So I was in this work mode of, okay, I'm talking to everybody about the band. We're playing the Tragically Hip all day. We're having guests on, you know, keep it together. And then when it was time, I was going to just walk over to the square. And I ended up sitting on the patio at the Turnanog and watching on the television, and every once in a while sneaking out into the crowd to just like soak in the energy of it all. But it was almost like too much for me. Like I sat with my small group of like radio folks and just kind of like took it in at the pace that I needed to, which was nice.
Right. I remember seeing you guys. Remember, we saw them in the patio. I think you were with Jude.
Oh, yeah. Jude.
Yeah, and the
it's
gang.
Kingston Jude somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was what about
day.
You, Riley?
I'm embarrassed by this story.
Uh-oh.
So I feel great shame. So leading up to that show, my girlfriend was working with a friend of hers, and they were like, oh, do you want to go camping with us in Algonquin at some random weekend in August? And it was like, you know, weeks, like a couple months out. Can't remember. It might have been before the show was announced, but I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then time's approaching, and you know, we all know the situation leading up to the show. And I was like, oh, hey, what weekend are we gonna be in Algonquin? And so I had to kind of choose between like this camping trip or going to the show. And at the place I was working at the time, we had one spare staff seat to kind of be the host for the box that our station had at the Kingston Center. And it came down between myself and Lisa Ray Koenig. I don't know if you guys know Lisa, but she was really excited for the show. And also she went to high school with the guys. So I was like, this is like, it's poetry. It rhymes. She has to be the one. So I was like, I'll just go to Algonquin. I can't think of like a more Canadian way to experience this than by listening on the CBC in the wilderness. And I get there. And it was a no radio site. Like, no, you weren't.
I know. I love how you said you were ashamed of the story, but then you kind of turned yourself into the hero with Lisa there. That was really good.
Thank you. Yeah. Got to give myself a little
pump
up there.
No shame there.
No shame. And, you know, I was talking a while. I think I was interviewing some of the guys from the Hip a while back, and I was saying how interesting it is that, like, at the end of Gord's life, when you think, like, I've had a few people around me who have passed, and, like, a lot of times at the end of their life, they're reflecting on, like, what's going on in their life and what they're doing. And I find it incredible that he, like, turned it on to the Indigenous issues in our country and, like, shed a light on what was going on, like, you know, like, hey, everybody, yes, this is happening to me, and guess what? Turn that focus here, shift that focus here, you know?
Using your powers for good.
Mm-hmm. And music, I mean, such a powerful thing. In my mind, it's like music and comedy. Those are the two things for me. And I know what you mean about those Zoom shows, because someone said, do stand-up comedy on Zoom. And I was like, no. I get that some people are able to do that, but no. But I can't wait to see you live again. I know Prince Edward County, are you doing a festival there in the spring? When can people see you again?
We're definitely looking forward to playing, you know, as soon as, like, the COVID sort of world kind of settles down. We've got things that we're hoping are going to come about.
Do our album.
Just can't really talk about anything until anything's real.
To take a segue from when we were talking about maybe the most Kingston music scene date in the history of Canadian music, Kingston has such a unique music scene, and I'd be interested to hear kind of your perspective of it as musicians who both kind of grew up in the Ottawa Valley and then spent time in London, where they also have a great music scene in that city. And then Kingston, there's an energy here that feels so unique. And I would love to get your thoughts on that, your vibe.
Well, I wouldn't be lying if to say that we were drawn here. We were living in Toronto, and I grew up in Arnprior. Chris grew up in Perth. You know, she found her way to Kingston, to Toronto, went around the world. You know, we met. My journey took me to London, then Toronto, then back to London. When we met, and then when we got together, we were living in Toronto, and yeah, like Kingston just had a draw for both of us. We were getting into the Toronto music scene, but it seemed impenetrable for what we were trying to do, which was a softer sort of a folk thing. I was playing in a couple bands, Craigslist, looking for a bass player, you know, show up, try and, like, you know, audition, jam. We're just, like, trying to do things. We bought a recording, what do you call this thing? What do you call these things? Recording studio thing? I don't know what they're called. A board, I guess. I'm not the tech person. But we were, like, up in our little loft bedroom trying to get it going. And damn it, Kingston had a draw. We knew Kingston had everything for us. We were like, it's close to our family. We can get jobs there. And it's got this music scene that we just felt in our bones was going to, like, we were going to click with. And we did. And here we are.
Yeah. Kingston's there's a lot of similarities for sure to London, because there's a, you know, like a really thirsty live scene. There's a lot of live musicians, and then there's a really nice audience. Like, my gosh, the audience in Kingston genuine. Like, they like all kinds of music. When we play, one of the trickiest parts about our shows is that we have this really wide demographic. We can't just play a certain venue because we literally get the melting pot of everything. Like, we get students, we get older people, like really older people. We get punks, heavy metal, everybody, country. We get like this really weird, I don't know exactly why it happens, but we have this really wide multi-demographic audience. So it's hard for us to find the venue to play in to sort of suit all of that. But I guess I'm sidestepping here. The thing about Kingston is that all these people exist here. I don't think that would happen in Toronto.
I love to watch a show in Kingston, and then the next night I'm watching a show, and then the next night, and I realize I just saw three different bands with the same guitar player. Maybe it's Van Sheen. But, like, you see that a lot, right? The musicians help each other out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's true. When we moved here, and Will McGonigal, who played bass for us and went back many years with Chris in early Kingston days in the music scene, that's exactly what he said. And he said, like, the musicians here, they play in different bands, they support, everybody supports everybody, and it's very communal, and it's true. That's very funny, but it's true.
You don't see that everywhere. I love that. I love that.
It's so lovely.
I love that we got the time to catch up with you ladies today. Is there anything else, Riley, that you wanted to cover specifically?
I don't think so. I mean, I've got one really dumb question, but just to bring this full circle, we opened up the podcast talking about the hottest selling merch item for the Strap-Ons being underwear. Is there just a certain something that clicks sometimes with just like, what is finding the perfect niche item for merch sometimes in a musical act?
That would have been good. I don't think we've ever had as much success.
No, we definitely haven't. And I mean, you're talking to the two worst salespeople, merch people.
If we could give everything away, we would. Terrible.
And we usually do.
Are you merch collectors? Like, if there's a band you love and they put out a weird item, are you the kind of people that are, I have to have that sort of thing?
Not so much for me. I'm a pure minimalist. I don't like collections. I just like a clean space.
So you don't have any of the underwear left over is what you're saying?
I do not. We have one t-shirt left that we made into, Chris made it into a to kill the reflections off of a shiny music stand when we're recording. And that's all we have left from Strap-Ons merch.
Well, as long as you're putting it to good use, that's what's important.
That's right.
Oh, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us. Thank you, Chris. Every once in a while, I pop onto your Facebook and see you playing guitar in the morning and putting it out there for people. And that's just such a beautiful thing. And Dee, all the work that you put on at the hospital, like, bless you both. Just love you.
Love you guys. Thank you. So it's been so fun to talk about music. It's literally been the first time.
We can't wait to be back being Chris and Dee again.
Soon, soon, soon.
Yeah. Instead of Chris and Dee raking leaves. Chris and Dee playing songs.
It's been great, though, to be around Kindred Spirits tonight. So thank you all so much for inviting
best
us.
Best wishes with your podcast, too. It's great. We'll look forward to listening.
This has been Kingston Live. We encourage you to rate us on your listening platform of choice and subscribe where possible. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Titan Sound. Hosted by Riley Jabor and Ange Stever. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Voiceovers and technical production by John Sanfilippo. Promotional photos by Virginia Meeks. Executive producer Rob Howard. Kingston Live is a member of the Canadian Live Music Association. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.